Today's episode of Hansel Minutes is sponsored by Datadog, a monitoring and analytics platform for cloud-scale infrastructure and applications. Datadog provides dashboarding, alerting, application performance monitoring, and log management in one tightly integrated platform, so you can get end-to-end visibility quickly. Be proactive with your monitoring strategy and catch issues before your clients are impacted. Start managing the overall health of your environment with a free Datadog trial. Visit datadoghq.com/Hansel Minutes to get started. Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking with Ali Arian. She's a strategic media professional. She's a copywriter, a storyteller, and a freelance writer. And she's worked for clients like XO Nicole. How are you?
I'm doing great today. How are you?
I'm doing all right. We got a little vacation day today, but I'm still working, and that's all good.
Yep, same over here.
So I discovered you when you had a really wonderful viral tweet. You know, you never know. You just say a thing, and then you go to sleep, and you wake up, and then it's gone viral. I'm sure that must have felt like something.
That felt very... So, like, I've gone viral before, but this one in particular, I was really just trying to, like, get some heat off my chest. Mm-hmm. I had just finished up a conversation with a new friend, kind of, like, going back and forth because I am trying to transition out of the freelance space and back to more of a full-time opportunities. Mm-hmm. And we were able to connect on that. And so the conversation went really well. And then afterwards, I was sitting to myself, I was like, oh, this is a myth. Like, we are not supposed to always monetize our hobbies. And so after sharing that tweet, I was like, wait, so a lot more people feel like this than I do? It was amazing.
Mm-hmm. So the tweet is, one day I'm going to talk about the myth of turning your hobby into a job, but how it can actually create a disconnect between you and the thing you once did for fun because it became work. You have over 100,000 likes and just tons and tons of conversation. It really kicked off a weekend of conversation. People needed to hear that.
I think so. And it just really speaks to the fact that, like, we may be having our own unique experience, but that doesn't mean that no one else is also experiencing something very similar and poignant, because, like, we're talking about hobbies and the things that we love, like, that is a very, like, deep place. And so to be able to just translate something in, I don't know how many characters, but to be able to translate that over, and then people are like, oh my gosh, me too. I've experienced that. That's why things need to remain pure. It was just such a enriching moment. And I was like, oh, I don't feel so alone now.
I think that we as people who both consume and create media, we recognize this parasocial relationship that we have with people. Like, there's authors I know for magazines and websites that I admire, and we don't know that they might be trying to hit the rent that month. And that article that resonated so much with us, it may have come from a place of passion, but it simultaneously may have also come from a place of, I needed to have 2,000 words written that day.
Oh, my goodness. So I think that's why I was in a place exiting 2020 where I was just completely exhausted and burnt out. I literally just lost my love for writing for a very temporary time, because, like, I love writing. That's the love of my life. So I can't, you know, I was going to go back to her. So I was at a place where I was like, I don't want to see you. I don't want to, like, touch my Google Docs. I can't even look at I love my journals. I couldn't look at my journals. I couldn't even pick up a pen, because everything felt like something I needed to pitch. Everything felt like something that would create income. Everything had a dollar sign attached to it. And it literally ripped the heart out of the thing that I literally love most deeply. And I was like, I'm trying to survive here. How can I create if I'm in survival mode? Like, it was such a heartbreaking experience, but it really brought, like, I had to step away from writing to really love it again. So you're absolutely right.
It's interesting. Maybe it's unique to writing and maybe it's not, but you tell me. You said something very significant there. You said, turned into something I have to pitch. I never thought about that until just this moment. If you're a writer, I just assume that you write about, you know, like Ta-Nehisi Coates is just like, I'm going to write about this. And everyone's like, okay, yes, sir. Like, we'll get you a website. Right. But for regular folks, you need to convince someone that this thing you're super passionate about writing about should be written. That you even have to convince them to let you do it.
It's like convincing someone that your story is important or that what you have to say matters. And it's like, that's why I had this time. I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to just write this on my blog because I don't have to go through nobody. Like, there's no like third man, second man that I have to go through or to just get a story across, or I'll like condense into an Instagram post or something like that. But those aren't generating the income that I need, you know, to, you know, do what I need to be a citizen of this world. You know what I mean? So it was something that was very jarring because I'm like, are they even going to get it? Does this even make sense? I feel passionate about this, but having to basically sell that story, it was just starting to feel very transactional, and I was losing the love because I had to adapt to a certain voice or tone of whatever publication I'd be pitching to. So it's very challenging sometimes.
Oh, I never even thought about that. You actually have to run your stories through filters, multiple layers of filters. Mm-hmm. So the voice, the content, does that mean that there are really a couple of other writers that just have, they exist for nothing else but to have an opinion about your work and stand between you and the publish button?
I think it's more so like, what does my editor think about this? Like it's, because most of the time when you're sending pitches, a lot of times you're saying, you sell the pitch, you make it all pretty, and then at the end you say, is this something that you would be interested in? Like, is this something that your publication would be interested in? And it's like, sometimes it's not. Like, sometimes every pitch doesn't hit. And when you are doing this as freelance, you're like, okay, if this doesn't hit, then that is how much less is going to end up on this invoice at the end of the month. Like, it's all, like, it really became down to dollar signs. There was a point in, throughout December, it was just getting ugly. Like, it was like, I have to make sure that they are going to like this or else. That's all it was. It felt like, or else. And I was like, I can't write like this.
And you mentioned you wrote a blog post about this, and I'll make sure to include a link in the show notes, that it physically like changed your body. Like your body started to notice that things were not right.
Yes. Like it was, whenever I know that like there's a transition coming or there's something just not settled with me, it's my, like people talk about their gut, but like I can literally feel it in the depths of me. It feels like an ache. It feels like a tension. Mm-hmm. Like those are the best ways I can explain it. It's just as much of a internal experience than it is an outward experience. And when I started to like feel like a groaning in my stomach when I had to like transcribe interviews or had to pitch interviews, like it was just becoming something that literally made me sick to my stomach. And to have something that you love literally make you nauseous, like that is something that I don't wish on anybody, especially when it comes to a hobby and a love and a passion that you've literally been a friend to, and it's been a friend to you, you know, for literally over a decade. So it's like, how can you even look at it the same way if it's literally making you sick? It's crazy.
Some of the people who quoted your tweet and some of the conversations that were started came back to the famous quote of, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. And it seems like people in the new generation think that that's not true. What do you think?
I think it's ironic. I think if you are doing something, it's hard because I don't really subscribe to it anymore. Like I think you can love things and allow them to remain pure and just allow it to bring you joy. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are subsets of those things that you can monetize, but it becomes a very strategic process to dissect the aspects of that thing you're good at so that you still love it, but you're still in a position to look at it objectively so that this is the aspect of it that I want to monetize, while this is the other aspect of it that I want to remain pure and sacred and untouched and to myself. So I think that's the I think that's the epiphany that I had, where I had to literally separate this. I had to dissect it into, this is the aspect of writing I want to monetize, and y'all can't have this other piece. This is mine. So I think it's a ironic quote. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it kind of needs to be like reimagined a little bit, especially mm-hmm. in the market that we're in right now specifically. So yeah, I definitely think it's ironic.
I have a friend who is a programmer, and you know, always wanted to be a programmer. That being a techie was her passion. She went to school. She did everything right. Like, she did everything in quotes right. And now she's like putting text boxes on a screen so that like an eye doctor's back end office can like see the data in the text boxes. Oh, and wow. She's like, but this isn't the coding that I was promised, right? Like, I thought I was going to write, you know, I don't know, video games, or like create data science to like change injustice. But now I'm making text boxes that go onto a, with a button. Mm-hmm. And there's a really great reply to one of your, to your tweet by a gentleman named Austin Cleon. And I'll put this in the chat as well. And he has a list, and the list says how to stay alive. Step one, find something that keeps you spiritually alive. Cool. I like that. Mm-hmm. Two, turn that into a job that keeps you literally alive. And he's like, oops, go back to step one. You got to find a new thing.
Oh, man. That makes me so sad. Like, I don't know how else to like put it. It makes me so sad because that's so true. It's like, I think the greatest thing I have gotten since, because I've like had to, you know, mute the tweet. Couldn't reply to
mute conversation. Sometimes I just tweet stuff and say mute conversation and never come back.
Yeah.
They could be talking about it and I don't even know that it's happening.
I'm like, oh gosh, this is still going. Like, just I literally
fire and forget.
Right. Like, there was a point, I think it hit like 72K likes or something. And that's when I like muted it. And then next morning I look up, it's like at 100. I'm like, okay, so y'all still going. So I think
let me tell you, they'll be going for years. I have a couple of tweets in the 10,000 range. They still talk about it. And every once in a while, I just bookmark them, put them on my desktop, and then twice a year go back to see if anything new came out of it. But it'll make the round.
Yeah. I'm definitely seeing that. And like, because I've like muted and kind of like stepped away from it, I kind of had to like be in a place of like, what does like sustainability look like when it comes to your livelihood and the things that you love? Because yes, you want to be fulfilled. You want to do work that's satisfying. And it's not always the perfect work. You know what I'm saying? Like, to your friend's point, like, she may be able to, you know, do those things on the, you know, as income and stuff while she's also, you know, still cultivating it for that next level that she's trying to get to. But I think that's a very like tender and special place to be in, to where you're not, it may be draining work because you're not doing what you envisioned, but the fact that you aren't at a place of like complete burnout so that the job's taking all your time and energy and you just completely hate it. Okay. Mm-hmm. What can you do to also like keep fulfilling that place of passion and love so that even though your job is the thing that's going to make, you know, allow you to have a livelihood, how can you still feel fulfilled on the other end so that there's a balance there? And I think finding that balance is probably the most important step in all of this, because if one side's getting more attention and love than the other while the other one's in a deficit, like, of course you're going to feel unfulfilled. So how does that marriage of the two happen? You know, and I think that's where I'm in a place of discovering, because even in my blog post, I was like, I don't know how I feel about this now. And I think it's coming through reflection and time, but I'm looking for the balance, you know?
It's really interesting to watch people online. It feels like there's more people online than before. There's more negativity online. Mm-hmm. So creative outlets, whether it be singing or dancing or writing or cosplay, is now just the place people go to criticize. So if someone isn't creating, their creation now is criticism, and they just beat on people.
Yeah.
You know how your ops team keeps a pile of scripts and wiki documents explaining how to perform those routine and emergency tasks that keep your applications running? They might call them runbooks or playbooks. Our friends at Octopus Deploy were thinking, you know, DevOps is about collaboration. So doesn't it make sense for runbooks to be automated from the same place as deployments? Well, Octopus Deploy is now the first deployment tool with native runbook support. The best thing is, your runbooks can share configuration settings and automation steps with your deployments. Find out more at octopus.com. How do you disconnect the, I need to get paid, I do enjoy writing, I do like that piece that I wrote for that company, and then when the comments start coming in and the well, actually, Ellie, how do you kind of compartmentalize those things?
Okay, so I basically, recently I came across this concept called like the negativity bias. And it basically is when you can have like all this positive reinforcement coming in. And then there's this one seed of negativity that pops up and it completely obliterates any type of good, positive feedback you were getting because it's one negative seed. And that's how much negativity, how much weight negativity holds. I don't give negativity that much power in my life. I really don't. Like, I'm my own worst critic already. So anything anyone on the internet has to say is nowhere close to where I can take things. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So it's really to a place where I'm just like, y'all, oh, you're probably having a bad day. I'm so sorry. I hope you find like a really nice video that can make you laugh or something. Because like we are all having like bad days. You know what I'm saying? Especially like where we're at right now, just as a global citizen, like we have faced some really bad days. And so kind of like zooming out of that and not really making it about what I said, but how it landed with people, I think that's kind of, that makes me kind of not so much the target. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not the target here. It's how it landed with your current experience and where you're at in life. And that's how you presented it back to, you know, this faceless person on the internet. So it's kind of like, how do I not be the target? You know, you just remove yourself from it.
That's interesting, though. But to your credit, and I hope you know this, that means that you are an extraordinarily empathetic person who are able to just take yourself out of the equation of which you are the primary variable.
Oh, well, thank you. I think empathy is something that, it's one of those things that I knew very early that was a part of like who I am. Cause you know, I always say like, you can never really give anything from a place that you've never been through. And so if somebody like me who comes from a background of, you know, being bullied and, you know, not being very popular and, you know, all these different factors growing up, you build empathy. Like, you never want to be the person that puts someone else in a bad place. Like, when the model of my blogging and my writing is, I always want people to leave off better than they did when they came in. And sometimes that comes through a eureka moment of thought or something that is thought provoking or something that is, and when I say thought provoking, it's not like triggering, it's, wow, I did not think of it that way. It provoked a new thought. Like, that is something that I really pride myself in, and I never want anybody to feel the way that I have felt in my past. So I think empathy is just a part of that. And I think in order to be a good storyteller, you have to be observant, and you have to be empathetic to the stories that you're telling and that perspective that's being told. So I think it's kind of a marriage of all that, those experiences.
I worry that people are stealing themselves, to go online, they prep themselves for the negativity. And in doing that, they steal empathy from themselves. So you go online and you're like, this is just, you know, it's stripped all joy from me, the negativity. So I'm just going to post this blog post, or I'm going to put up that website, and I'm just going to basically make myself numb. And we get into a cycle of negativity.
You know what's funny? If I'm going to be negative, the internet will never see it. Like, if
excellent.
You know what I'm saying? It just won't. I pay a lot for my therapist. So she's going to hear it. My dad is my confidant, so he will hear it. And what the internet will get is the reflection in the insight that came from that place of negativity. Because if you just stay and live in a place of negativity and doubt and just turmoil thought patterns, like, it will completely engulf you almost to a place where you can't even get back out of. That darkness will surround you and drown you. And for me, I've been in a very dark place before. Like, that's something that, you know, as I mentioned, shout out to my therapist because she's helped me to get out of it. And my parent, you know, my dad has helped me to get out of it as well. But the internet for me is not the place for that. The internet for me is a place where I'm able to share the experiences that I've gone through, whether they're negative or positive or just insightful, or just like, oh, this was strange. And there, that's the place where I share the revelation of it. It's not where I bleed. It's where I like share my healed-ish wound. You know what I'm saying? So
the ability to be able to put something online and be strong enough to be empathetic enough to say that when the negativity comes is a thing that I think we don't teach, though. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no class. There's like, we used to take home ec and they teach us how to cook and teach us how to like balance a checkbook or whatever. That doesn't exist. There should be a, here's how to deal with negativity. Keep shining, little one, class that they teach you in high school.
I absolutely agree. You know, what's funny though, I think, so I love like Chris Rock's stand-up, and he has his stand-up special called Tambourine. And one of the things that he mentioned was how his daughter's private school said that this was like a zero tolerance for bullying space. And he was like, well, what am I paying you guys for? Like, bullies are part of the experience of growth. And, you know, it is unfortunate that like there's no space to be taught empathy, but it's through human interaction that I feel like your empathy bones are like strengthened and those muscles are strengthened. Because, you know, you can read a book, but if it doesn't land because you didn't have the experience to actually apply what you were reading, how much did you actually retain? And so, you know, information is good, but I think application is better. And if you're in a place to actually apply what you're learning, I think that makes you more of a emotionally intelligent human. And I think that's what we need more of, is the compassion and emotional intelligence and empathy to actually apply to our situations, not just read about it. Because I mean, if we've learned anything from this summer, people can read all they want, but if they're not applying that, it's literally upon deaf ears. So
what do you think about the rise of the creative multi-hyphenate? It seems like everybody has a long list. And then when they're in a forum, online or otherwise, and they introduce themselves, there's a list of about 19 things that they do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah. I absolutely love it because when I think about creativity, I'm a Christian, so I think of how multi-hyphenate Christ is. And because I'm a reflection of who he is, I believe that I should not be confined to just one trait, skill, creative characteristic. Like, I believe that my gifts will make room for me, and some gifts, you know, amplify in certain seasons while others are being cultivated in certain seasons. So I love a writer, digital content creator, author, blogger. Like, I love, give me all the commas, you know, like give me all the hyphenates, because I think that explains the paradox of like not putting yourself in a box. Like, a lot of times we put ourselves in a box before the world even gets to, but I think there is nothing wrong with being playful in your creativity and trying new things and, you know, being confident enough to say like, I'm good at this. So I self-declare, I self-proclaim myself to be this, this, and this. Not because I waited for the world to give me that title, but because I cultivated these skills and I deem myself this, you know. I think there's freedom in that.
You know, I work at Microsoft in my day job, but I do like a YouTube and a TikTok and I got all this different stuff. But I mean, I'm not making any money on those things. And everyone says, oh, you should quit your job at Microsoft and you should go and make content full time.
Yes.
And like, why is it so attractive on this side of it? Like, we've got all these YouTubers. It feels like there's an illusion that all we have to do is quit our jobs and then everything will work itself out and our hobby will become this amazing joy and we'll have a million subscribers. And I don't know what happens when you do that, but you know, money starts just flowing in, right? All the advertisements and stuff.
I'm kind of concerned about that mindset. You know what I mean? Because I've seen it too. I did not choose this freelance life. COVID put me in a predicament, and I had to decide how I was going to shift my livelihood. It was a dire situation, and I knew if I can't do nothing else, I can write a story, okay? So I think that was the position that I, you know, entered this freelance space as. It wasn't anything I raised my hand for. I would not, not in the place where I am in life. Like, I would not choose this life. But has it been beneficial? Absolutely. It has taught me so much about myself. And one of those things is that if all things, you know, pandemic wise and et cetera, of 2020 wasn't a issue, I would tell whoever is looking to make that transition to being a full-time creative, is like, plan out your 3 months and 6 months saving, okay? Because as we know, like, life is unpredictable. And if you are looking to make a leap of faith, be faithful in at least having a cushion and having a place where if all things go wrong, your rent is taken care of, you are able to have groceries, you're able to get around because your car is filled with gas or you have Uber money. Like, make sure that all your high cost necessities are taken care of, because life is unpredictable and you want to have a cushion, you want to be safe and be able to create out of a place of safety and not survival. And I think that's where things get blurry, because if you're just like hustling to survive instead of creating from a place of, oh, this feels good, I know this is, I'm rested in being able to have a roof over my head and all those things taken care of, you just produce in a different way. I think it's glamorized right now in this time that people do want to have free products and paid sponsorships and all that stuff. But that stuff like comes with time. Like, you have to build up to that stuff. But I think people see people's story at chapter 10 and they have no reference to, you know, chapter one and all the stories in between. And I think that's what Instagram kind of gets you. That's what Twitter kind of gets you, these snapshots of people's lives, but no context to the stories that actually got them to the place that they are, that we see. And so it's kind of like, if you want this, you got to plan. If you want this, like, don't look at Instagram as your mood board. Like, look at your own life as your vision board. So
you should use your own life as your vision board. It seems like everyone is using everyone else's life as a vision board. And Instagram is just there to tell you that you don't have a private jet.
Right. Exactly. And I kind of, you know, going back to empathy, I really have a very tender place in my heart for all the young people who are like, this is their TV. Like, these are their billboards. These are their like magazine ads. Like, we had all those things to kind of go off of, but like theirs is literally in their face, consuming their attention. And I couldn't imagine having kids right now, like who are taking in the content. And I couldn't imagine being a teen tween during this time, taking in that content as a place of, this is what success looks like. This is how you should look, especially as a Black woman, you know, in our bodies and how they're commodified. And, you know, this is how the hourglass shape should look. It's just, it's been distorted. Like, image, beauty, success, it's all been blown up and distorted and almost unrecognizable if you have no reference of what life was before social media. And that's a very tender place for me when I think of the grand scale of things, because I have a niece and a nephew, and I'm always asking my sister, hey, like, what are they watching? Like, hey, what they got on today? You know what I'm saying? Just to tap in and make sure that they're consuming the right type of media, because who knows how, you know, it's even going to look 5 years from now, because how it looks now, I'm just like, the kids.
Yeah, I have a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old, and the 13-year-old is convinced that being a streamer is the thing. And all I've seen are news articles about streamers falling apart, collapsing under the pressure, like playing games 8 hours a day, for me, as an old dude, sounds fun for one day. Right. Like, literally, it's like, okay, I'll take a Friday off. I'll play games for 8 hours. I'm like, okay, that's what that feels like. Can you imagine doing that for, like, it would just, that is a perfect example of just sucking the joy out of something, making 100%. Video games, pay the rent. But I don't want to stomp on his dreams. Right. But it seems like it's the new, like, I'm going to play sports, I'll be professional, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you probably won't.
Yeah.
And so you might want to have something mm-hmm. to fall back on. But I don't want to be a dream killer.
Right. Absolutely. It's like, you know, it's like one of those things like, hey, like, everybody's not going to make it as a rapper. Like, everybody is not going to make it as X, Y, Z, whatever, you know, basketball player, football player, whatever it may be. I always say, like, whenever I'm able to, like, sit someone down, I'm like, look at the industry that you think you want to be the star of and think of all the people on the background who are actually making the rules and setting the scene and actually moving the pieces behind the scenes. I think if we encouraged people to take the star quality out of the thing they want to do and actually zoom out and expand that to the thing, to the people who are actually moving the chess pieces behind the scenes and actually making things shake and move and, I guess, quote unquote, writing the check, I think that could actually allow children, young people, even people, you know, even millennials, like, to actually dream outside of the things that we've been told is the only way we can make it. Because, like, not everybody's supposed to be an entrepreneur, you know what I'm saying? Not everybody's supposed to, because I learned that. Like, and if you can actually see something, again, something that you love and that you're good at, keep that sacred. What are the transferable skills you can apply to something that's going to create a fulfilling life for you? I think that is how we can kind of shift that mindset. So,
fantastic. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I truly enjoyed this.
All right. If you want to engage with Allie online, you can find her on LinkedIn and at her website, yourgirlallie.com. That's A-L-E-Y. You can check out her blog as well as her many bylines all over the internet. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.